Welcome everyone to today's edition of HFS Unfiltered. And today I'm excited because we are diving into a topic that's critical to almost any organization that's looking to scale AI and generative AI, and that's talent. Because it's not really about the latest technology, it's about getting the right mix of skill sets, technical expertise, business insights, and also leadership. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of research at HFS, and it clearly shows that the skills debt that our enterprises are accumulating is one of the biggest obstacles to realizing the ambitions and the dreams that we have with AI. Because without essential skills, even the most ambitious AI initiatives can fail. So to unpack this challenge, I'm thrilled to have Jasmine with us. Jasmine is the global head of finance transformation and is also a very, very passionate advocate for talent transformation. So Jasmine, welcome to our show.
Hi, Saurabh. Thank you for having me here. Really enjoy it. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Fantastic. So Jasmine, let's start with a little bit of a big picture. You know, you are at the forefront of finance transformation. And how do you see AI reshaping the global business services model, you know, over the next 3 to 4 years?
Right. Yeah. So when I think about GBS and the impact of Gen AI, GBS has all been about how do we get operational efficiencies? How do we reduce cost to serve? It's been branded as being a very operations heavy, people heavy organization. As technology has emerged, especially I think what Gen AI offers, and it's inevitable, you know, Gen AI is here to stay, is it's less about operational efficiencies becoming the competitive advantage. It's more about how does GBS take diverse data sets together, connect dots in a way where it wasn't as possible to drive a much more data-driven business decisions. And that ultimately, and doing it at speed, at scale, and at all levels of the organization. That, I think, ultimately becomes the competitive advantage for a GBS as we go forward.
Yeah, so look, you clearly have a lot of big ambitions in these opening remarks, and we completely agree with this, right? I think the idea maturity for Gen AI is very, very strong. Practically everybody that I've spoken to is very excited about the potential and prospects for it, not just for GBS, but for the broader enterprise as well. However, you know, I call this a death by 1,000 POCs that's going on right now. There is a POC left, right, and center, but very few organizations are able to scale it up. And while there are many reasons, one of the reasons that keeps coming up is this skills debt, you know, is that either we don't have enough talent or we don't have the right kind of talent or we don't have the right kind of leadership mindset, et cetera, which is, you know, really impacting their ability to scale these things up. So how do you see this challenges playing out and what's the impact that it's having on the ability to adopt and scale AI and Gen AI effectively?
Yes, and I'm going to, you know, speak from a point of maybe a little bit biased as a finance, but really broadly, I think it applies across the board. But as I look at, as a finance leader, and I see technology evolving, organically what's happening is the business is expecting finance to play a different role. Yes, finance, and a broader role. It's almost like, okay, yes, you know, finance has been the go-to place of because of our strong analytical capabilities, because of our strong financial acumen, we are the ones, and risk management as well, we are the ones that everyone looked at to produce reliable business insight, financial insight. Now, with Gen AI evolving, what people are expecting is one, to automate, leverage the emerging technology to automate up to 80% of the work that we do today and shift our focus to driving data-driven business decisions. Now, when I look at how do you actually accomplish that, then the skills naturally that start taking precedence is our digital literacy, number one. And number two, how do we also elevate our EQ skills, our creative problem solving skills, our storytelling skills. Some of those skills that we need to actually then convert our financial acumen into business acumen and drive creative business solutions and help not just finance, but the organization elevate its competitive advantage. So this just requires all of us to almost be very intentional that, okay, well, how do we fill that gap? Yes, it's very important. Yes, we need to prioritize, but it means that we need to carve out time as part of our day-to-day job to continuously learn and start building these muscles as a matter of practice, as a matter of every day, something that we do that we have fiduciary responsibility to do.
That's fantastic, Jasmine. You talked about emotional intelligence. You talked about curiosity. You talked about creativity. But honestly speaking, you know, if you look at it, that's not something that our accountants have been trained to do for. That's not what they graduate out of. That's not what universities are teaching them. That's not what work requires them to do. You know, typically it's A to B to C in a very linear fashion, and they follow through the process. Creativity is not often associated with finance and accounting as a skill set. So while I agree with you, what can organizations do to help sort of meet this almost sort of vacuum of skill sets that we so aspire to have?
Right. So, you know, I think as organizations, I think one of the biggest transformational shifts that we as leaders need to make is shifting away from I am hiring for my finance function versus I'm hiring for my marketing function, to almost step away from, maybe we're moving into this world of where experiences are not as relevant as skills are and mindset is. And maybe over-indexing on the skills and the mindset. And to me, those are quite important, right? Like as I think about attracting talent or bringing new talent in, revamping the hiring practices and not looking for a jack of all trades, because you'll never get that, right? It's revamping the way we attract talent, develop talent, promote talent, and getting laser focused on what are the top skills and mindset we need in our people. So when I think about mindset, right off the bat, for me, that's non-negotiable, is a growth mindset. Because I think as we progress and at the speed of change that we're in, growth mindset is what ultimately enables any one person to build new skills, to strengthen new skills, to become a better version of themselves every day. And they have an easier time embracing the ambiguity and the change that we're constantly in. So I look for that, and I think that's quite critical. Secondly, when I think about especially finance folks, is looking for both digital literacy, but also your softer skills, such as storytelling and emotional intelligence, and getting very, prioritizing which ones are the most important. Now, as we then prioritize, I think it's then how do you keep it simple and practical? And how do you fill that gap? You've attracted it. You've revamped your hiring practices. Well, okay, well, now as part of our day-to-day life, I'm going to go back to, as leaders, making it a priority where we spend 5% of our time of our day job building these muscles. Every one of us, even the best storyteller, can become a better storyteller. But investing 5% of our time to learning and building these muscles. And people ask me all the time, it's like, how do people learn? Well, people, yes. And I use the analogy of reading a book versus hands-on experimentation and application and use cases. So I'm a big proponent that it's doing less theoretical learning and focusing more on hands-on application, identifying the work that our people do and doing practical application of those muscles and building that resilience, because then it becomes a part of how they do their job day in, day out. And lastly, I'll leave you with is breaking down the silos. I think the more we encourage everyone to break out of their silos, be it the teams, be it the functions, be it the levels, we learn from each other and become far more of a collaborative, fluid workforce.
I love the breaking of the silos piece, Jasmine. Here at HFS, we've been talking about the one office, I don't know, for almost 10 years now, you know, and last we did this exercise and we asked about a bunch of enterprises, you know, how many of you have actually realized the one office? And the answer was zero. You know, nobody has got there. And it's a very, let me take a very simple example, right? You take IT and business. The IT folks keep blaming the business that they don't, like you mentioned, digital literacy, and they don't understand IT and all the challenges. And the business folks keep blaming the IT. You know, they don't understand our business. They don't know what's going on. How do you bridge this gap?
I love it. You know, and you know, at HFS, you guys are known to be the disruptors, right? And ask the questions that people are afraid to ask. I myself have also been sharing the past decade that we're going to be in a world where there is no such thing as the technology department versus the marketing department versus the finance department. Those functions are going to go away. Those, because that's work is not going to be about those domains. But we are where we are today, and we have the domains. I think one, it's first, I think foremost, recognizing that embracing technology, including Gen AI, is a business problem. It is not a technology problem. And starting off with viewing this as a business problem, it brings everyone to the table and everyone is held accountable to it, and not just one function versus the other. Second, I'm going to go back to really starting to break down the functional barriers that we have. And I'm a big proponent that one of the tricks in my toolkit that I've used, for a lack of better words, to break down those boundaries is creating opportunities where you're exchanging talent. And when you exchange talent and you start creating and experimenting with a more fluid workforce, it does a few things. One, in a very organic way, you're actually building a talent that is more broad in their skill sets. They also start building empathy for one another. Now, all of a sudden, now I understand the pain and your challenges. So I think that EQ, it accelerates one's EQ muscles. It builds empathy for one another. You understand and appreciate for someone in technology moving over to a non-technical function, their business, you're then giving them the opportunity to strengthen their business acumen, something that technologists will get criticized for. But similarly, on the other end, if you take a finance or some other function, you put them into a technology, then their digital literacy strengthens as well. The common criticism you get from that side of the fence as well. So I think that becomes a very effective, you know, it's one of the ways to effectively start breaking those boundaries down, and it's more organic. It's not because someone said you need to. And starts building that bridge and strengthening it. And lastly, I think on our journey of getting there, it's really important. You're always going to have, no matter how many functions you have, it doesn't matter if it's technical or non-technical, people are people. You put five leaders in a room, they're going to have five different perspectives. So I think we have a responsibility and an obligation to bring those five perspectives together and unite them on a shared vision, shared set of KPIs, shared journey, and it's the collective success as opposed to the individual success. And ultimately, helping them be complementary to one another as opposed to conflicting with one another. But those are some of the things that I, you know, for the past I've utilized.
I think that's fantastic. And I think what you so eloquently described is essentially a lot of the diversity principles, right? There is, you need to bring together a diverse set of people. Obviously, when you talk about DEI initiatives, it sort of gets sort of bracketed into sort of different aspects of it. But essentially what you're talking about is bringing together a diverse set of opinions, collective experiences, etc. And through that, through empathy, through emotional intelligence and understanding each other, we can sort of bridge some of these gaps that we've been talking about. But let me actually ask you a question on DEI specifically. You know, and DEI diversity initiatives can take so many different facets and forms. But if you look at, let's say, gender diversity, while we've all, again, been saying a lot about it, for especially the last decade or so, honestly, if you look at the data, we've not made much progress. And I'm just taking gender diversity as an example. You can take any form of diversity and inclusion initiative. The answer comes out to be the same, that not much, right? So again, the question for you is, how do you make this real? You know, I'm not questioning the why, Jasmine. I'm questioning the how. You know, because it's the why is proven, you know, to the point that you were making. The how is where at least people that I've talked to are struggling, right? Either it becomes a token system, which again doesn't help, or it's sort of some sort of thing to do, to sort of, you know, colloquially call it putting a lipstick on a pig versus doing something real with it, right? And I think would love to get your thoughts on how do we make this thing real.
Yes, and I love how you used, you know, token. You know, being a woman myself and a woman of color, anytime I speak to any diverse, you know, anyone from a underrepresented community, whatever that may be, no one wants to achieve their accomplishment because they were a token that helped someone meet their KPIs. That's not what people, they want to feel, they want to know and have the confidence that they earned their way there, right? The second piece, and then I'll give you, you know, my thoughts of how I think we can get there to really drive real progress and real change is, you know, time and time again, I think what we sometimes underestimate is when we decide on certain actions to solve a problem, we move too quickly to the solution without understanding and unpacking what the problem itself is, right? And when I think about diverse, you know, diverse talent in at all levels of the organization, especially as you move up in an organization, to make that become real, you need a strong, diverse pipeline. And you need to invest in a strong, diverse pipeline. And that's how you get real change to happen. Well, then how do you actually create a strong, diverse pipeline? One, I think making talent development a priority for everyone. It is no longer a nice to have. It is no longer you do as an optional, but making it a priority from day one in your organization for every person. The second action is holding your people managers accountable for talent development. And that means a couple of things. You know, across the spectrum of organizations that I have passed through, time and time again, what I see is people get promoted because of what they know, not because of how they develop talent or how their leadership skills. And I think we have a responsibility of shifting that conversation a bit and making it a key metric that if you have talent that you're managing, how do we also make sure that you're being measured against how you're developing each and every one? And third, I think deploying a more fluid workforce and making mobility between the type of jobs that people have in an organization, making that more fluid and more open. And what does that mean? That means that shifting workforce from back office operations into customer facing roles. And it's okay, they may not have the experience, but they have the growth mindset, they have the potential, they will get the experience if they're given the opportunity. And I think if we start doing that, we will see that shift of creating a more diverse pipeline of talent across the organization and deal head on with some of these KPIs that we see, but also at the same time, we're also being very inclusive in this strategy. Because I think it begs to some of the criticism that we currently see. It's like, well, you know, when you follow this action, are you now excluding some people? I think this way it's inclusive, but it's organically creating that pipeline. And the metrics will allow that, right? Like we go into every organization and you start looking at the gender metrics, you look at the racial metrics, you look at other diversity metrics across your workforce. The mass workforce, we're okay. It's when you start moving up that we have a significant gap.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I think the point that you're making about hiring and building a pipeline is so very important. I don't think you can just say that hiring is an HR job. To the point that you were making earlier, we need to get beyond those silos. In fact, I often joke with my colleagues is all of us do only three things. We hire, we sell, and we deliver. You know, basically, that's it, right? Irrespective of where you work, if you look at any job, it's basically about those three things in a very, very crude terms. And if you start to just say that, you know, hiring will only be done by HR and selling will only be done by sales and delivery will only be done by some back office people, then you're losing the plot a little bit, right? And I think that's such a good reminder to keep things simple. And you know, you can't just suddenly build a diverse organization if you don't have a pipeline of candidates that are diverse. So Jasmine, this has been a fascinating conversation, and I could go on asking you tons of other questions. But before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you this thing. You know, as you, if let's say you had a magic wand and if you could make one wish come true about the future of work, what would that be?
Yes. So as a finance, we talk about finance being the limited resources, right? I actually think the limited resource that every human being has is time on earth. And to me, what utopia looks like, or something close to it, is leveraging the advancements in technology and AI to help us get maximum ROI on our time, both in our professional and our personal lives. And that means, does that equate into quality of life? Does that equate into helping us focus on what matters most and driving maximum impact in our lives and living, you know, to me, that's what the magic wand looks like. And hopefully we'll get closer and closer to it.
Well, Jasmine, thank you so much for sharing your insights today. I think it was a fascinating conversation, and I hope people who are listening into this will learn something and get some really practical nuggets on what they can do individually and in their organizations. But let's very excited to see how your continued work, you know, shapes the future of talent in this AI-led world that we're living in. And thanks again for joining HFS Unfiltered, and thanks for sharing your insights.
Thank you, Saurabh. Speak soon.